This is UN and Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Matthew Wells. In this week's programme, one Burundian politician's genocide denial when it comes to Rwanda is simply unacceptable, the UN's expert on the subject tells us. And amid reports of horrific violence, an emergency UN aid programme gets underway in Uganda to help South Sudanese refugees. But first, 8 oil-producing countries in Africa are facing a very significant economic shock following the collapse in oil prices over the past 2 years. A barrel currently costs around $50 on global markets, down from a high of $125. The countries most badly hit are Angola, Cameroon, Chad, Republic of the Congo, Equatorial Guinea, Gabon, Nigeria and South Sudan. By contrast, all importing countries are benefiting from the price collapse. Daniel Dickinson's been speaking to Abebe Selassie, Deputy Director in the African Department of the International Monetary Fund.
There are about 8 countries which are significant oil producers in sub-Saharan Africa. For those 8 countries, the decline in oil prices from around $100 or so per barrel to well below that since the late 2014 has had a very dramatic effect. The immediate effect, of course, is to reduce the amount of export earnings they have. But the fiscal accounts or receipts that the government typically receives have also declined dramatically. And this has been a very significant shock to the oil-producing countries.
What is the impact on ordinary people in those 8 countries?
This has had a significant impact on people and standards of living in those countries. The imported goods are much more expensive. I mean, some countries have had to devalue, depreciate their exchange rates. So that has translated into more expensive imported goods. So that's been a major impact. In Angola, for example, the subsidies that they had on fuels have been done away with. So the average person has seen a significant increase in how much they have to pay for fuel. This is a very direct impact this has had on the livelihoods of people. And the squeeze on the fiscal accounts has also seen less government revenue, some government projects failing to proceed, so a lot of stalled public investment projects.
What are the knock-on effects on non-oil-producing countries in Africa?
Okay, so here's the subtle part. In principle, this has been a positive effect because they now have to pay less for oil prices. So in those countries, you've seen lower oil prices for consumers to some degree. Also kind of their overall external accounts, there's less of a need to spend dollars, scarce dollars on oil. So for most oil importers, the benefits have been more positive than negative.
There are some countries that are planning to begin oil production soon. I'm thinking of Tanzania and Mozambique. Is that a good idea in the current climate?
I mean, those countries haven't started producing yet, so they will not feel the effect of lower prices yet. In fact, the key question is, at current lower oil and gas prices, will the investments that are necessary to go forward? And I think the view is that the fines are so significant that these projects will go forward. And from a government policy perspective, I think it's important to facilitate this production. It's a little bit like finding precious material in the ground. Just because you're afraid of the adverse effects, you don't leave that material in the ground.
Recent comments by a prominent politician in Burundi stating that the 1994 Rwanda genocide was a fabrication of the international community have been branded by a UN human rights expert as simply unacceptable. UN Special Advisor on the Prevention of Genocide, Adama Dieng, said the statement, published on the website of the ruling political party known as CNDD-FDD, was inflammatory and could be seen as an incitement to violence. Burundi's been undergoing political turmoil since April 2015, when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would stand for a controversial third term. Hundreds have been killed and more than 250,000 have fled the country. Mr. Dieng, who previously worked with the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, spoke to Diane Penn about his concerns.
Well, having been the former registrar of the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda and right now being the special advisor on the prevention of genocide, I cannot but be shocked when I heard the then president of the CNDD-FDD, Pascal Nyabenda, stating that the genocide in Rwanda was a fabrication of the international community. I think this is simply unacceptable. I mean, the whole world knows that a genocide occurred in 1994 in Rwanda, a genocide of the Tutsis, during which Hutu, Moderate, and Tua, who opposed the genocide, were also killed. And therefore, in a context where there are already a lot of tension, particularly between Rwanda and Burundi, having this type of statement cannot but be inflammatory and may lead to further detention.
You're also worried about actions by the youth arm of the ruling political party there in Burundi. What specific concerns do you have about them?
I was very worried when I read the statement in which the Imbonerakure, which is the name of the youth wing of the CNDD-FDD, went to the extent of saying that if ever President Nkurunziza is overthrown, there will be a genocide against the Tutsis. I mean, and I think this is simply unacceptable. I mean, I will, of course, condemn whoever will try to overthrow by armed or by illegal means President Nkurunziza. And I think this is one of the reasons why we have been insisting for an inclusive dialogue so that the crisis be settled peacefully.
An emergency aid operation is being implemented by the World Food Programme, WFP, in Uganda to assist refugees from South Sudan. Amid reports of horrific sexual violence against women and forced recruitment of boys, the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, estimates that 100,000 people have fled to Uganda since early July to escape renewed conflict in the world's newest nation. Fierce fighting between government and opposition forces in and around the capital city, Juba, has led to widespread abuses and tensions across the country. Jocelyn Sambira reports.
Trucks carrying South Sudanese men, women and children make their daily trek to the BDBD Refugee Settlement Center in northern Uganda. Since December 2013, after a fallout between President Salva Kiir and the first Vice President Riek Machar, people have been crossing into Uganda to escape clashes between opposition and government forces. But some arrived as recently as July, like Halima, a young mother from the town of Yei. When clashes erupted in the central Equatoria state in July, her husband was shot dead in the chaos. She had to run with her four kids.
When the crisis started, there was shooting everywhere and people began to run. People were killed. They killed my husband. When I realized my husband was dead, I took the children and fled across the border into Uganda. We went through the forest and we finally got to Uganda.
Uganda's hosting a record number of refugees, not only from South Sudan, but also from neighboring countries like the Democratic Republic of the Congo, DRC, and Burundi. Mike Sackett is the World Food Programme Director in the host country.
Uganda is hosting a record number of refugees, almost 500,000. They come from Burundi, DRC, but particularly from South Sudan, which has been affected by very serious fighting, initially at the end of 2013, but even as recently as last month. Since that time, 75,000 new people have come into Uganda, and the World Food Programme is providing essential food rations to them.
The World Food Programme, or WFP, needs $7 million every month to provide food aid to the refugees, but the agency is facing a funding shortage that has forced it to revise its survival rations. Despite the generous support of donors, says Mr. Sackett, the agency will need an additional $20 million to restore full food rations to refugees for the rest of the year. The 200,000 refugees from South Sudan who arrived before July are receiving less food. However, those who arrived afterwards, particularly the vulnerable like the elderly, orphans, and malnourished, will continue to receive a full ration. Cuts are expected to affect about half of all refugees on food assistance, WFP confirmed. Jocelyn Sambira, United Nations.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN and Africa. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Matthew Wells.